Thanks for listening to the best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
You're listening to the best of the Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker.
I almost fell out of my chair when you told me your feelings about the number one pick in the draft. And let me start off by saying this. There's already a report out of Cincinnati today saying that the Cincinnati Bengals have told Joe Burrow, super quarterback out of LSU, that he will indeed be the number one pick. And rightly so. And here we are prepping for the show. And again, I guess you felt like you had to play a role. You had to go along with the shtick. You had to go along with Rob's narrative and say something outlandish. Because you are telling me that you would not take Joe Burrow number one if you're the Bengals. And that you actually think he's the third best quarterback in this draft. Please, George Reister, explain yourself.
First of all, there's no stick. It's only real. And I look at the stats. I look at the numbers. I look at what my eyes tell me.
Here you is ain't what, looking at the stats because nobody had better stats than Joe correct. Burrow.
Joe Burrow. I acknowledge Joe Burrow had one of the greatest college football seasons of all time. And truthfully, I believe that Joe Burrow is more Joey Harrington than he is, you know, a super Tom Brady, Drew Brees, anybody, an upper echelon quarterback. He needs talent around him to be able to maximize it. Like, he's not a guy who lifts the talent around him. He's a guy who's lifted by the talent around him. And case in point, you look at, this feels like fool's gold. I know they changed offensive coordinator systems, but he essentially doubled his stats in terms of yards from 1 year to the next in LSU. He went from 16 touchdowns to 60. Like, this feels like, and when you look at the amount of talent that he had around him, he had all those wide receivers running wide open in a new offense that the SEC had never seen. Nobody ran what they ran. And so when you have mismatches all over the place all the time, you can make high risk throws, and his receivers were able to save him and all that. Granted, he was accurate, all that. But the receivers being open and being able to make plays and create separation, which they're not going to have in the NFL because the Bengals roster is not an upper echelon roster. It'd be different if he went to Tampa, but where they have all these weapons now. But he's going to Cincinnati, and he's not a guy who's going to rise all boats around him. And then as an Ohio guy, yes, he has played in some inclement weather, but he played in LSU. In controlled temperatures, warm weather, all of that. And in Cincinnati, that wind gets to blowing and his arm is not weatherproof.
That's it?
What are you talking about?
I am not even close to being convinced. Not even close. You want to poo-poo Burrow because of his receiver. Hold on. Because you said he's got all this talent around him.
Yes.
Well, didn't Tua have talent? Because I like Justin Jefferson, but he
that
had
is my
two
question.
Bad boys in Alabama.
That is my question about Tua. Is that with Tua, he has shown more consistency over multiple seasons. And the only question I have about Tua is every throw didn't matter because he had such great talent, so much time. And when you saw him against Georgia, when you saw him in another game, and they got Clemson, and they got pressure on him, he crumbled. So that's my question about Tua, is that has he been lulled into a false sense of security? But he is talented out the roof, and if I'm taking first, I'm taking a guy whose arm is weatherproof. I'm taking a guy who is agile, who is a leader, who's a winner, and didn't just have this outlier season. Like, this is something that is not – Like, you can't trust stuff like that. When you are looking at data points for guys, take it to NBA. So if a guy is a regular throughout 3 years, he's been a 32% three-point shooter, and then 1 year he shoots 46%. What does that tell you? Do you believe the 46%?
He worked hard.
Oh,
he worked
Lord.
Hard and got
if you
better.
If you do it once, it's an accident. If you do it twice, then you know what you're doing. So we'll see rookie year.
I got to let the listeners in on a little something. Because I peep your game now, George Reister. At first, Burrow, I'm baffled. I think you're trying to be Rob Parker Jr. or you just don't know what you're talking about in general. One of those two.
I'm always accurate on quarterbacks.
And then when you start killing Tua, or questioning, let me put it that way, questioning Tua, now that's when the light went off.
I know what you're getting ready to say. Come on.
I know where George Reister went to college. It was way up there in the corner at Oregon. And I know where Justin Herbert went to college, way up there in the corner of Oregon. So you tell me Burrow's not good, that good. You tell me you got questions about Tua, and I suppose you love Justin Herbert.
I got questions about Justin Herbert. However, the quarterback that I would take first, if I were drafting first, I'm drafting Tua first.
What about the injury? Look, and I'm a Tua guy.
This is football, bad things.
But hold on, bad things, and I'm with you in that. Like, if I'm Miami, I think he'll be there at five. I'm taking Tua. It's high risk, yes, but it's potentially very high reward. So I'm with you on. I'm not gonna hold the injuries against him that much, but considering how well Burrow threw it last year, and that he and Tua both, as you said, similar question marks. They both had tons of talent around them. They both were on teams that were head and shoulders above all but, two or three other teams in the nation.
Yep.
And so it's the same question marks for both of them. I'm going with the healthier guy. I mean, because Tua's had some strange
injuries. Here's the thing is, his ankles won't be an issue again because he had that tightrope procedure. He's had it on both ankles. So the sprained ankles are a wash. They are gone. But here's the thing that about football. It is that bad things happen to good people. And you see there's so many times where you'll see a guy who's been scot-free, injury-free in college. And then all of a sudden he starts getting hurt in the league, a la George Reister. And then, or you have a guy like, who's been injury-riddled.
Well, we have had guys injured in college, Carson Wentz. Now, he's still been injured, but he's obviously able to play most of the time. But Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, they had injuries too. And obviously they've been okay. So, but I hear what you're saying. And again, I'm with you.
And with Justin Herbert, like you brought up him, my question, yes, I'm knocking, I guess, Burrow a little bit because of his talent and that, and that teams hadn't seen that sort of offense ever before with that much talent. But on to Justin Herbert's credit, he didn't have – like, he's had one wide receiver that's been an NFL-caliber wide receiver the whole time he was there, which is inexplicable. But also, my questions around him, when I looked in his eyes before this season, when I would be on the sideline, when they would show him on TV, whatever, there were times that I looked in Justin Herbert's eyes, and it did not instill confidence in me. I was like, ooh, this dude looks shaky.
That's one of the most important things, as you know, for a quarterback.
Yeah, but this year as a senior, I was like, okay, there were times I saw in his eyes. I said, all right, this dude's got it now. He was able to turn the light on, and I think that if you surround a kid like him with talent like you did at the Senior Bowl, which was outstanding. He was outstanding in the Senior Bowl in practice. He won the MVP, game MVP, all of that. So when you surrounded him with better wide receivers who could get open, then he performed better. So that's why I would take Justin Herbert second out of the quarterbacks because there's no point. Chris, here's the thing that you got to understand about football and quarterbacks in particular is that you are, yes, projecting out into the future. Leadership matters, but you can't just fall in love with the last thing that you saw.
Joe Burrow had a good December. You act like Joe Burrow
season.
Had a great bowl game. Joe Burrow was great from September 8th to January 13th. And for all the, you mentioned all the talent around him. Well, when they did face teams that are on their level.
Matt Leinart, same thing.
Don't
Carson
you think
Palmer,
you
same
could
thing.
See. But
Joey Harrington, same thing.
No. Matt Leinart did not. Did his eye test look as good as Burrow's?
Yes, well, he was on some of the greatest college football teams of all time. He threw like 100 touchdowns while he was in college.
He didn't throw it like Burrow. Yeah.
Joe Burrow had one of the greatest college football seasons of all time. He deserved to win the Heisman. But I think that sometimes people get lost in great college seasons and then that translating into the pros. It don't always work like that.
And I agree.
Because it's systems, styles, and it's also the talent surrounding you. Because at LSU, they had a mismatch. When you have that level of wide receivers.
They did it
at
to Alabama.
Every single position.
They did
Correct.
It to Clemson. They weren't mismatches then.
I mean, what are you talking about? Yes, they were.
Better, but they all were NFL caliber players. I'm saying the NFL caliber receivers at LSU were going against NFL, you know, future NFL defensive backs when they met those top teams.
Some of at some positions, but you got to remember, some of those guys are freshmen, some of them are sophomores. But when you look at their entire team, Joe Burrow was protected really well, had a top tier running back in Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Four wide receivers who are all going to be in the NFL. You don't have four NFL DBs on the back end on pretty much any team. Four?
Right.
No.
I may stand corrected. Maybe Rob Parker is here and he's just changed his voice.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
And this is what makes Belichick great. But he was like, look, even though they won, even though they played fairly well, even though they're off to a great start of the season, Belichick is riding them. And for a guy like Gronk, I think he was sick of that. And George, that's why I don't think he would have come back if Brady had stayed in New England. And I'm not shooting anything. I'm not saying Belichick's not great. He is great. But his style of coaching is not going to work for everybody. And I have said for years, the New England Patriots are the San Antonio Spurs of the NFL, or vice versa. The Spurs are the Patriots of the NBA. However you want to do it. Greg Popovich is Bill Belichick. And both of them, you have your chance. Both of them hard-driving coaches, okay? And both of them were blessed, fortunate to get a superstar who was just that unique guy that didn't mind being coached hard, didn't mind being yelled at, didn't have the superstar ego where he couldn't let you talk to him a certain way. And with them, I'm talking about Tim Duncan and Tom Brady, with them being so great, them winning so much, everybody else had to fall in line. You see Greg Popovich talk to Duncan a certain way, then every other player has to get in line. Same thing with Tom Brady. And now that Duncan's gone, almost immediately, their next superstar who they were going to hand the torch to, who was going to carry them for another decade, got out of there. And I'm talking about Kawhi Leonard. We've seen other players that don't, they bristle under that type of coaching. And it happened when Duncan was even there, but the players weren't that great. So, you know, it wasn't a big deal. But now I think you could see Belichick go through the same type of stuff now that he doesn't have this superstar leader that's willing to take it.
you are right about the fact that you do have to have a certain type of superstar there to create that sort of culture. You are right about that. And you are right about the fact that I don't think that Rob Gronkowski comes back if he were in New England. The nuance in it is, though, is that Rob Gronkowski, when you are an NFL player, actually just professional sports in general, I don't think that people always understand that you are, that your love for the game can be stripped away with the business, politics, and the interpersonal relationships. Because we all want to be happy, healthy, make money, and enjoy life. That, and have a good place to go to work. And if you are dreading going to the stadium every single day, it makes it hard to work even if you're making $10 million a year. It makes it hard to work if you're making $2, $3 million a year, because you should enjoy where you are. And I think that that's where Bill Belichick is. The difference between him and Greg Popovich, though, Chris, is the fact that Greg Popovich, players love Greg Popovich. They're like, man, Pop was so good. Like, he has a heart. He this, he's that. But when I've talked to players who used to play for Belichick, aside from the Brewskis, the Bradys, Willie McGinnis, the guy that were in the buddy-buddy, yeah, the guys that were in the buddy buddy club. Aside from them, everybody's like, I don't like that dude. I don't want to play for him. He's a great coach. They give him all the credit for being prepared, giving him an advantage, all of that. But as far as him, the person, how they treated him as a person, no way, buddy. They are not down with that.
But I think their coaching style is similar. Their coaching style was similar. Maybe they, you know, they deal, obviously, Pop is a little more personable, I believe, than Belichick. But I think there's a great similarity there. What do you think? Now, this is always kind of the discussion. Was it more Brady or more Belichick? Now, I think both of them are spectacular. I think Brady's the GOAT. I think they're both the GOATs. Rob, I got to give him this. When he holds it against Belichick, this cheating, and that's fair. And if somebody wants to hold that, you know, over his head, and that's why he's not the GOAT, I'll give you that a little. But I do think, just when we look at the accomplishments, the brilliance and what they do, I think those two are the GOATs. But if I had to pick one that I think, like, everybody's wondering, okay, who's going to be successful without the other? First of all, and I think you would agree with this, George, Brady does have a built-in excuse, and it's his age. If he goes to Tampa Bay this year and just falls off the map, you got all these weapons, maybe Gronk is great.
That's impossible.
But, well, hold on. I mean, he's 40. He's going to be 43. At some point, it's going to hit him. And well, if it hits, I don't think it will this first year, but I'm just saying, if it
he
does.
He wasn't good last year. He was not good last year.
I think
people blamed it on the lack of quote unquote talent around him. But now that he has this talent around him, because granted, Tom Brady's not the quarterback last year that he was 2 years before that, 4 years before that.
You know, he was tied for first in everybody says he couldn't throw the downfield. He was tied for first in downfield production, 20-yard passes or more.
Quarterback rating down, interceptions. I mean, just yards.
12 down. And 4.
This was not his. This 20, was what not have,
24
his
and 8?
Banner
I mean,
year.
But it wasn't a horrible. I mean, he was only slightly worse than Aaron Rodgers, slightly.
And No. But he was still worse. And when you look at his quarterback rating, it was toward the bottom of the league. He was not an upper tier quarterback last year. That's toward the bottom of the league. That's less than half the teams.
That's barely toward. That's more in the middle of the league is what it is.
So you want a middle of the road quarterback?
Impossible.
So you want a middle of the road quarterback?
You think that's what they're getting in Tampa Bay?
No, I think that when you put an old man who's skilled and all that stuff with Mike Evans, Goodwin, Gronk, and either Cameron Brate or OJ Howard, then and an offensive line, then you're going to be just fine. They're going to make the playoffs. This is what you can count on. Def, taxes, LeBron and Tom Brady making the playoffs. That's what you can count on.
Well, that's the first sensible thing you've said since you joined the show. So thank you for that. But I just think getting back to my initial premise, I think Brady has been a little, I give more credit to him than Belichick. As great as Belichick is, I give a little more credit to Brady because I remember, first of all, what Belichick was in Cleveland, which was one time in the playoffs in 5 years. And I know he's grown, he's improved, he's matured, all that. No question about it. He's certainly a better coach now than he was then. However, even when he got to New England, and you know that was a New England team that Drew Bledsoe had led to a Super Bowl, that, you know, had made the playoffs a few of the years before Belichick got there. His first year with the Pro Bowl quarterback Bledsoe, they were 5-11. They were 8-8 the year before. He takes over. They go 5-11 with Bledsoe. Then they lose the first two games of the next season. Bledsoe gets hurt. Brady gets in, and they go on a tear. They whip Indianapolis with Peyton Manning, and I think it was their first game, and the rest is history. They win like 11 games and then win the Super Bowl in Brady's first year playing. And then without Brady, Belichick's like one playoff appearance in 7 years without Brady.
But the truth is this, is that you give Tom Brady way more credit for their existence. And yes, they've both been very complimentary of each other. Oh, I couldn't have done it with this guy. Couldn't have done it without the other guy. But this year is going to be where the rubber meets the road, because everybody said, oh, he can do it with anybody. He did it with Matt Castle the 1 year. Okay, we'll see how good either one of these guys is. Because if Tom Brady goes off and has a great year, wins the Super Bowl or gets close, and New England doesn't miss the playoffs.
If New England missed the playoffs,
Tom Brady gets a notch up. But right. I give Bill Belichick a little bit more credit only because – yeah, because of what Rob Parker hates, is which he takes credit from, like he is willing to do anything to win. That includes cheat. He's also.
So you giving him credit for that?
I'm just saying he's willing to turn over every stone that needs to be turned. And also, I do believe that had you given him Peyton Manning, had you given him Drew Brees, had you given him Russell Wilson, like any of these other top five type quarterbacks when they were in their primes, that they win the same amount of Super Bowls. Because I think that Peyton Manning is a better quarterback.
You mentioned top notch. I mean, listen to who you mentioned. You didn't say Matt Castle.
No.
You didn't say Kirk Cousins. You said
But he still wins a couple with Matt Castle, probably. He probably wins the Super Bowl with Matt Castle.
He didn't even make the playoffs with Matt Castle.
They won. They went 10-6.
What does that matter? That don't matter. I don't care if you go 15-1. If you don't make the playoffs, does it matter? You got to make the postseason. I would rather be 10-6 or 9-7 and make the playoffs than 11-5 and miss.
Yeah, but that's the way the NFL playoffs are set up. I mean, that's how 8-8 teams get in, or 7-9 teams like the Seahawks a few years ago got in. Like it's just the way it works.
All I'm saying is they didn't make the play. They've made the playoffs one time in 7 years without Tom Brady. That's Belichick.
So you think you win the division 18 straight years or 19 straight years, how many times they've done it? And it's because of just players?
No. I started off by saying Belichick's the GOAT. So, you know, I'm not saying he's not tremendous. I'm just saying if I had to pick one, if I had to pick Brady or Belichick as giving more responsibility to which of these guys for the dynasty, even if it's 51-49, I'm going with Brady because his track record without Brady is not good. That's all I'm saying. And Drew Bledsoe was a stud.
And Drew Bledsoe was winning. He didn't even have a full chance to win with Drew Bledsoe.
He had a full season. He had 18 games. They went 5-13.
And the next season, when Drew Brees got hurt,
Bledsoe,
they were on their way to the playoffs.
When Bledsoe got hurt?
Yeah, they were going to go to the playoffs.
They were 0-2 when Bledsoe got hurt.
So you think that team...
They were 0-2!
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com.
And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
All right, we got former NFL General Manager Charlie Casserly coming up right now on the Discover Card Celebrity Hotline. Get your free credit score card today. Even if you're not a Discover customer, it includes your FICO credit score, and checking your scorecard will not hurt your credit. Learn more at discover.com/credit scorecard. Limitations apply. Charlie, welcome to the Odd Couple.
Great to be with you. How you guys doing?
We're great. Now, we got George Reister in for Rob Parker today. And George and I, and I know you're remembering from Jacksonville, George and I have been arguing for the first half an hour of the show because he's told me, Charlie, that Joe Burrow is not only not better than Tua, but he's not better than Justin Herbert, and that Cincinnati will make a huge mistake if they take him number one. I got to think you think that's ludicrous.
Well, I won't use the word ludicrous. I'll just say I disagree with it. You know, I've watched numerous tapes on these guys, polled a lot of coaches, teams, just to get their opinions too. And the consent, I polled 27 teams at the combine, Burrow or Tua. Tua's healthy. And 23 said Burrow. 3 said Tua. 1 said they were neutral. But what I see is this. First of all, let's take Herbert. If you go do a workout, Herbert can throw the ball as anybody. You put the tape on, his anticipation is not great. He waits till the receiver gets open. He's inconsistent on his accuracy, on his decision-making, below both of those guys. Tua and Burrow, to me, there's not much difference between the two of them. They're both top five talents. I would say this, that you have to consider the injury history involved in it. You can't ignore it with him and Burrow. The body build, I've never seen him live because he didn't work out at the combine, but I'm told, you know, I've gotten different opinions on what his lower body looks like, which that's durability factor. They're taking hits. He's kind of a gunslinger to us, so sometimes he's going to throw it to the other team. Sometimes he's going to miss some, but, you know, he's a big play guy. And I have Burrow ahead of Tua, but if somebody said they like Tua better and gave me some reason, certainly I would listen to it. And you can say that there's an element there of Burrow being a one-year wonder. Well, that's an argument. I don't disagree with it. Both these guys play with an immense amount of talent around them. That's something that you could argue with both of them, because they're not going to play with the same team against the same caliber competition. In other words, they play with a team that was better than most of the teams they played, but played some good teams. They're going to go to a team in the NFL that's not going to be as good as the teams they're playing, and every week they're going to play a good team.
Charlie, I want to bring Jalen Hurts into this discussion as well, because all he has done is win. And with the success that Dak Prescott, Lamar Jackson have had, where do you put him in relationship to the rest of the quarterbacks that you see?
Yeah, he would be four is love. And then to me, Hurts is the next guy. I think he's underrated. In the games that I watched, I thought he performed well from the pocket, as far as reading the defenses and being accurate. When I've talked to people who have seen him a lot more, there's a little bit of question about his anticipation ability, accuracy, consistency. In the games I watched, and these people have seen more, I didn't see that much of a problem with that. But I think he's in the next wave. The tape that I saw a guy could operate from the pocket. I saw a guy who was a better drop-back passer than Lamar Jackson. Now, he's not. Nobody's Lamar Jackson running the ball. Okay, he's in another world. So,
Charlie Casserly, NFL Network analyst, former league GM, joining the Odd Couple. Charlie, there's talk now about Miami trying to get up to 3 to take a left tackle, which obviously they need because that offensive line was the worst in the league last year. If they get Tua, let's say they stay at 5 and they take Tua. How much of a concern for you is that offensive line? I mean, you already got his injury history, but with that offensive line, I mean, is that how much of a major concern for you is that?
Well, it's no question about it. You're talking about a guy who's been injury prone, and all of a sudden he has no tackles. At least you have no tackles when he's drafted. By the end of the draft, he might have some tackles, okay? It's a tough spot Miami's in because and I've been there. With the expansion team, we thought we had two tackles. We had Tony Boselli and Ryan Young. and both passed medicals, by the way. And that's a controversial thing, because you can have two doctors look at the same player. Somebody's going to say yes, somebody's going to say no. They don't know. Nobody can know. So on these medicals, it's a guess. And educated guess, but it's a guess. You're predicting the future. Who can predict the future, see? So that's a major concern. I see what Miami's doing. And Miami could, they might be able to do this. Go to three, get a tackle, and at their second one, have a quarterback there, one of these two quarterbacks there. Very conceivable.
I'm wondering how scouts are viewing this draft, because obviously the analysts have less info because they haven't been able to go to the pro days, talk to general managers, talk to head coaches face to face in those private conversations. How do you think the teams are going to handle this virtual draft? And do you think that the rankings of the players are going to be more widely and spread out than they were in previous years?
Well, I think that's very possible. I think that I started an era when we did not have a combine. So we didn't have physicals. We didn't have group workouts. We had no senior pro days. We didn't have a tape library. We had nothing. It was the scout's ability to evaluate a player at the school call and then come back in the meeting and talk about him. That's how we put a draft board up. So compared to what they even have now, I mean, they had the combine, which means they got, including bowl games, 400 interviews, 330 physicals, 330 psychological tests, 280 workouts. They got a ton of information, plus they have a tape library with almost every game these guys have played. So they have a lot to work with. Now, what don't they have? Don't have some of the complete medicals. We drafted players without medicals at all, for the most part, when I started. So what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to drop some guys down in ranking because you don't have a 40 time, which is critical at some positions, wide receiver, cornerback. So some guys are going to get dropped down. This is where the talented scouts are going to be able to find guys who didn't go to the combine and be ahead of the other teams. So the team that does the best job looking at the tape and has the best scouts has an advantage in this year's draft. If you have extra picks, you have an advantage, and you got to win college free agency because there's going to be more talented players available after the draft than normally.
Charlie, before you go, we got about a minute left. Sean Payton has said that the Saints, the New Orleans Saints, are canceling. You know, there's no virtual meetings, no online meetings, no virtual offseason programs, period. Is that a big deal? You know, he says show up in July, you know, assuming they can play, show up in July and we'll go from there. Is that a big deal or not?
Probably to a team. First of all, one of the things they're saying there is that in the lockout, we didn't have any of this, and we went out and played in a week, that 10th week. Conditioning, to me, is the single most important thing. If I'm a new team, though, and I'm not an experienced coach with an experienced offense and defense, I want to be able to do something. Okay, now doing it and not repeating it on the field, looking at the tape and coming back, yeah, you're missing a huge part of the learning curve in that. But I think if you're putting in a whole new system, I think there's some advantage to doing it.
All right. Great stuff, Charlie. We appreciate it. And we all are excited about tomorrow, as we know you are. So we'll talk to you next week.
Hey, it's the only live sporting event.
Right. It's going to be bigger than ever, even though they can't have all the bells and whistles they usually have, you know?
It'll be good.
Yep. All right, Charlie. Thanks a lot.